with a warning, a bit like things that could trigger people to on the radio or on the television. So just bear that in mind. This is not major, I promise. When you were a child, were you ever told to go and sit on the naughty step? Not ever. No. Right. Or the equivalent, whatever that was. I think so. Lots of us could put our hands up, but you're obviously none of you brave enough. So, you were to sit there and you were to think about what you'd done until you were properly sorry and could bring yourself to apologise and at least look as if you meant it. Many people think about the church's season of Lent a bit like that, but it isn't here as a guilt trip. It is to offer us space to have some time with God on our own and to let go of whatever's getting in the way of that. Lots of us go out for a walk on our own when we're sad or troubled, and we find it puts things straight. Somehow we feel better when we come back. It's a bit like that. So you'll know, anyway, that Lent starts this week on Ash Wednesday, and it ends on Maundy Thursday. Today, just before Lent, our readings show God and people in harmony. The Gospel shows Jesus' friends recognising that Jesus is God and has God's authority. But by Good Friday, the Gospel shows Jesus abandoned, tortured and killed for power and politics. So we might think of Lent being effectively bookended by readings which take us out of our everyday lives and up into strange and difficult territory. In our first reading today, Joshua and Moses disappear from view for a long time on the mountaintop as they meet God. And in our Gospel reading, we go with Peter, James and John and we follow Jesus uphill. We are to travel light with open hearts. In our mind's eye, we travel with them, leaving the safe familiarity of home territory. And we climb into wilder places which are strange to us. That demands effort, it demands commitment, and it demands trust. But we have companions on the way, and we are following Jesus. So let's trust the journey this morning and see where it takes us and whether or how it changes us. We arrive on the mountaintop where Jesus stands, shining and glorious. Moses and Elijah are there too, bringing the law and the prophets together in community with Christ, who stands between heaven and earth. Everything comes together in Jesus. It all makes sense. It's all of a piece. Once we have seen this for ourselves, we know it in our bones, and nothing can ever be the same again. And Peter's well-meaning offer to build shelters shows us that. Because it just seems odd, irrelevant. And we know that we can't understand any of this experience with common sense. But we also know with certainty that it makes perfect sense. The Father speaks lovingly from heaven, affirming Jesus' authority. He instructs his witnesses to only speak or act when the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. In the meantime, we are to ponder these things in our hearts, to watch and to pray. So they go back down, returning to their people. unable to share what they have seen, except perhaps with one another. Their experience on the mountain, they have been told, is not for sharing until or unless the time is right. But there, the people who go down the mountain are not the same as the people who went up. How could they ever be the same after that? But having said that, of course, there was no proof that anything had happened. No evidence, no pictures, no Instagram, no Facebook, no nothing. Except they had been changed. In their hearts, their minds, their souls, who knows where. Time for them had stood still, as it does occasionally if we are open to it, and nothing was and could be the same ever again for them. Peter's offer to make shelters in the everyday world would have been a lovely, fitting and generous thing to do, but in the context of eternity, it somehow feels off-key, inadequate, and maybe a bit embarrassing. In the presence of God's glory, what can we ever offer that we don't see as woefully inadequate? Well, perhaps that's just the point. The only thing we discover we can offer with any degree of reality is ourselves. Just as we discovered at Bethlehem in that stable, we are not asked to sit on the naughty step and think about what we've done, but during the weeks of Lent, we are invited to ponder these things as Mary did in our hearts, to look into our hearts, to unpack all that we have stored away in them. What does this mean to me now, or this? We may decide to let go anything which has outlived its purpose or its beauty. That's an option. But more importantly, let the times of joy come to the surface. Those times of joy which changed us, which helped us to grow, which transformed our experience of God, of other people, of creation. And as we treasure those things in thankfulness, in doing that, they will draw us deeper into God's love. There's a but, though. Isn't there always a but? We are not to cling to them. Like mountaintop experiences, they are transient, like a sunrise or a sunset. They cannot be captured and possessed. Or they are reduced to trophies, to souvenirs or status symbols. If you look back, you may discover that most of the experiences which set off a significant change in you didn't last very long. They were very often fleeting moments. Now you see it, now you don't. But somehow, if we respond prayerfully to them, they can and do transform our lives and our world. So just before we continue to say the creed, just take a moment of quiet and ask yourself if there was a moment, an instant even, when something that wouldn't look major to anybody else changed the course of your life. An insight after which nothing was ever quite the same. A chance comment, perhaps. Something which took things in an unexpected direction and for which you remain grateful to this day. So may we thank God for those moments, for those people, for those prompts. And may we encourage others to be opened to such times too. Amen.